Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome to At Arlene's Spirit Cast. If you're new to this podcast, we talk about all things related to mindfulness, magic, astrology, tarot, Reiki, meditation, anything in that realm. Today we have a phenomenal guest on. She's one of my favorite authors that I've read this year, and her book is called The Other Goddess, Mary Magdalene and the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge. I absolutely love this book, and when she agreed to be on the show, I was quite frankly terrified I would fangirl her way too much.
I know, you have brought her up a lot in this season, but it's been like the season of the gods and goddesses, apparently.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've definitely been talking about the divinities a lot more, and that's probably what they want. They're probably like, it's time, let's, you know, chat about us. But this episode's very empowering for women. Empowering for everybody, I would feel like, but especially if you're a woman or identify as a woman, however you are on that.
But we do want to make a note, though, that this episode does cover some adult content. So if you're not down to hear about, you know, exploring sexuality and those types of themes, then this may not be the episode for you. But we encourage everybody to listen to this because there might be something in here for you.
Yeah, we would say it's a 18 and up episode. Yeah. So I think we should get into it. Do you want to tell them where they can find us at?
So you can follow us over on Twitter, now called X, at @edpro_pgh. We do tweet a lot. You follow us on Instagram, Tumblr, Threads, TikTok, Facebook, at Edda Arlene. You can go over to YouTube where we post Reiki-infused videos multiple times a week. At Edda Arlene, go like and subscribe to get the juice. And you can go to our website, eddaarlene.com. Sign up for our email list and get a free Reiki session on the first of every month.
All right, let's get into the episode.
All right.
We just want to take a quick moment to invite everyone listening to check out our shop at eddaarlene.com. If you like what we do, it is one of the easiest ways to support us. Plus, you will get our awesome handcrafted 100% vegan soy candles, our prints, books, oracle cards, and book a Reiki session. All this can be found at eddaarlene.com and linked in the show notes.
All right, we are back with Dr. Joanna Kuyawa, the author of The Other Goddess, Mary Magdalene and the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge.
Yes, and we're so happy to have you on. I love this book. To our listeners, I probably have talked about it
all throughout the season.
Yeah.
Literally all throughout the season. Yeah. This has been made a featurette in every episode, probably.
Yeah, probably. I feel like this season we've talked about the goddesses a lot.
Yes.
And Aphrodite, yeah, for sure. Because I had started meditating with her recently. And we had a guest named Kiara on,
yeah,
where we ended up talking about the goddesses.
Yes.
Intensely. But so Dr. Joanna, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
First of all, hello. I'm happy to be here. And something about myself. So, wow, it's been a long and interesting life. So what would you like me to tell about myself?
What led you to working with the goddesses and how they have transformed your life?
That was a very interesting journey, actually, because it started, you know, where I was born in communist Poland. And it was both communist and very intensely Catholic. So I was brought up as a Catholic, and I guess I was lucky in some sense that, you know, they had the example of a divine feminine, but it was Virgin Mary, right? So she was actually the main and continues to be the main deity, actually, in Poland. But so when I, as a young girl, I was used to go to a church, and I would see, you know, this beautiful representation of Virgin Mary, but very kind of sublime and completely asexual and kind of difficult to identify with, right? She's a mother, she's a virgin. And I already was a little bit rebellious, and I thought, you know, there must be something else for me, right, as a young girl. So I noticed that, you know, on a side in the church, in every church, there was a representation of another goddess-like person that was feminine and beautiful and somehow mysterious, but she was also considered to be a harlot and at the same time really close to, you know, the main teacher, Jesus, and her name was Mary Magdalene. So this is, I would say that early in my childhood, this is how my journey started, that I started to have this fascination with Mary Magdalene, but I didn't act on this for a long time because I got then pulled into Greek mythology. And earlier we spoke about Aphrodite, and of course I had my favorite goddesses such as Aphrodite, Athena, Artemis, you know, so the goddess of love, the goddess of wisdom, and the goddess, like with Artemis, I would call the goddess of not a hand, but I would say the goddess of freedom, because she always made her own choices very independently. And then, you know, I started to went to Asia because I was lecturing there, and I was exposed to, also through yoga, through my yoga teachers, I was exposed to Hindu goddesses. And I realized that they are very similar to the Greek goddesses, except they have a more of a spiritual aspect to them, because Greek goddesses are a little bit like modern day celebrities, Greek gods and goddesses, you know, they are just beautiful, they are immortal, but they do not really give us any spiritual guidance, do they? So they are certain archetypes, but they are not very spiritual. When Hindu goddesses, for example, like Saraswati, which is like Athena, the goddess of wisdom, she has this kind of spiritual upliftment also. So it's almost like one Athena, one level higher. And then I was thinking, is there, for example, somebody like Artemis, you know, which is, you know, very free goddess. And I think that it probably corresponds to the Hindu goddess Durga, who is often represented riding a lion or a tiger, you know, and she's also very independent and, you know, fights demons, you know, very a little bit of a warrior goddess as well. And then I was thinking, what happened to the sensual goddess of beauty and love and Eros, Aphrodite? And it took me a long while until I didn't find her until I really deeply studied tantric tradition, which is esoteric tradition of Hinduism, which includes also Eros and exploration of sexuality for the sake of spiritual enlightenment, goddess Sundari. So she's again like Aphrodite, but she has this spiritual upliftment that actually can lead us to, you know, expanded consciousness or spiritual experiences through erotic experiences. So I felt like I am done with my goddess journey, right? Like I explore all of these beautiful goddesses. And then in my 30s, I met two men who asked me to go with them on a trip to Jerusalem. And one of them was tall and handsome. And I thought, sure, I will go. You know, tall and handsome adventurer, you know, and all expenses paid, because they wanted me to write a book about that, you know, discoveries in Jerusalem and in the Holy Land. So I said, sure, I'll go. And then, you know, they took me, just as they were showing me around old city of Jerusalem, which is actually an amazing place to be. The energy is unbelievable. You know, sometimes I was touching walls and I could feel them like shaking. You know, there is something there. There is kind of mad passion, you know. Very interesting energy. Anyway, they took me to this church on a hill near the old town, the old Jerusalem. And there was this church of Saint Mary Magdalene. I think it was a Russian Orthodox church. And there I saw for the first time the portrayal of Mary Magdalene that was very different from what I saw in Catholic churches, which is this, you know, penitent harlot, really, you know, sexy, beautiful woman with red hair and chains are broken, and apparently it was supposed to represent the fact that, you know, she's not a prostitute anymore, that's why the chains are broken. But in my book, The Other Goddess, I have a different explanation. I think that she actually broke the chains of lower consciousness. And, you know, she was always in this kind of penitential posture, you know, like gesture. She's like, you know, apologizing for being there, right? Or stones are being thrown at her, and so on. But there in this Russian Orthodox Church or Eastern Orthodox Church, you know, she was standing there in a very goddess-like posture with her hand extended, and in her hand she had an egg, you know, like, and I interpreted it as her gift to humanity. And through my studies, I know the traditional explanation for the egg, which basically it is a very medieval and naive explanation. Apparently, after the crucifixion, Mary Magdalene went to Rome and spoke with an emperor, and he said he doesn't believe in resurrection. And she says, you know, I can prove that resurrection is real, and if it's real, this egg in my hand will turn red. That's why the red head egg, right? So with that is also celebrated in some countries during Easter, you know, the painted eggs. And I think this is a very naive and medieval addition to the story. I think what Mary Magdalene actually tells us, she's offering us a gift of higher consciousness or of a cosmic egg, right? And then I thought, well, I just had this realization in this church. And then when I went back to Australia, I started to do research, and I realized that there is a whole lineage of goddesses that are represented in a very similar way. Do you have any questions at the moment?
We were just enjoying your story.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. But you can interrupt me anytime because I can get carried away easily. Okay.
Oh, we love it. Please get carried away.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying this.
Yes.
So, you know, so when I went back to Australia and I started to study them, and then I found that in Sumer, which is like almost 5,000 years ago, in ancient Sumer, there was this goddess Nimna. And if you, you know, talk about, you know, goddesses or even like, you know, ancient aliens talk about her because she's called considered one of the Anunnaki, right? Mm-hmm. Like the original gods that fell from the sky. So, you know, there are all kinds of interesting interpretations there. However, goddess Nimna is always represented with sitting on like a throne, you know, with her hand extended and with an egg or a fruit in her hand, exactly like Mary Magdalene.
Okay.
Except that she's sitting on the throne. And it's the representation of Nimna is a little bit more complex because in front of her sits a man that apparently Joseph Campbell, you know, the famous mythologist, explained that the man represents humanity and she represents the divinity. And she's offering the fruit, as I thought about Mary Magdalene, to humanity, you know, this gift of something, this gift of consciousness. And between her and this male figure, there is a tree of life. And the tree of life very often represents the kind of doorway between different dimensions, right? So it's axis mundi, like the doorway between the worlds in mythological terms. And to make it even more interesting, each of them, goddess Nimna and the man who was being offered this fruit or an egg in her hand, they have two upright serpents behind them. And, you know, in esoteric tradition, serpent represents a higher spiritual wisdom. But because I'm also connected with Hinduism because of my studies in Asia, we know about Kundalini energy, of course, right? And doing yoga. So, you know, the upright serpent represents the awakened Kundalini energy, right? So she has the awakened Kundalini energy behind her. And by the offering of this fruit or an egg to humanity, which is represented by the man on the other side of a tree, she also raises his Kundalini, right? Because his serpent behind him is also upright, which means it's not asleep, it's not a coiled serpent when the Kundalini is not awakened, right? So she awakes his Kundalini energy. There are some more modern interpretations. Some people believe that perhaps the serpent represents actually a DNA helix and so on. So, you know, there are many exciting explanations for this. It's very interesting because actually, apart from the fact that she's sitting on the throne, you know, so she's definitely in control. She's offering a gift to humanity. And that was my interpretation of Mary Magdalene in this church of St. Mary Magdalene in Jerusalem, except that she was standing, the same hand, the same gesture, a hand extended with an egg in her hand. And I thought, okay, are there any other goddesses? And then I thought, you know, Inanna is a very interesting goddess, which is a little bit later than Nimna, but not much. And, you know, she had a priestess called Enheddanna who was writing beautiful poems to her goddess. You know, they are very beautiful erotic poems, and I include some of them, you know, in the other goddess, because this is the most beautiful erotica that I've ever read, right? And written in a female voice, right? So it's not like some guy fantasizing about the chick, right? She's just calling upon her lover in sensual ways, you know, but in very kind of also graphic ways. But it's all very beautiful. It's nothing sleazy there. So Inanna is a very interesting goddess because she is not shown necessarily with a fruit in her hand or an egg with her hand, but she's always shown, often shown with a serpent in her hand.
Interesting.
So it's a little bit, again, Kundalini energy, I think, there, you know. And then also she's the first goddess that we know of that she actually went into the underworld, because in her story, she's being tricked to go underworld, you know, to go into the city of the dead, so to speak, because apparently her sister's husband, I think, died, and she was asked to come to his funeral. And, you know, at the gates to the underworld, she was asked to strip herself of all her powers, because this is what happens when you die, right? You lose everything, right? But she thinks she will come back. However, you know, once she's there, there is no way out, right? However, through some trickery and magic, and then with some help, she manages to get out, but she has to sacrifice her beloved lover, Dumuzi. So he has to go there for 6 months into the underworld, right? And then for another 6 months, she can enjoy him in a very erotic way, right? So she makes the sacrifice out of him. So it's quite interesting because it starts to be similar to the story of Mary Magdalene and Jesus, except that here the female protagonist is in charge, right? She's not just standing there, and she's not just any prostitute. She's just a very sexually empowered goddess. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting for me already that, you know, in this deep past, erotically empowered goddesses were like goddesses. Right. And the closer we get to, you know, Christian times and modern times, the goddesses become called, well, harlots, whores or prostitutes. So I thought like I'm going to follow this erotic lineage. Right. So it's quite interesting because then there's also a story of betrayal included there. She was not only betrayed at the gates to the underworld, but also she has learned that her beloved Dumuzi assumed the power and sat on her throne when she wasn't there, right? So there is a little bit of a betrayal there. And it may be also the reason why she decided to sacrifice him, because he took advantage of her not being there. So it means she's not afraid to assume her power, you know, and punish those who, you know, didn't respect the boundaries, right? Or didn't respect her might, even if it was her beloved. So that's a very interesting story, and especially that, you know, very often she's represented as a star and with the serpent, you know, the serpent. And the serpent also supposed to represent in mythology surrounding her, you know, Axus Mundi, which means, again, the gap or the doorway between the worlds or dimensions, the way, you know, the tree of life and wisdom represented in the earlier depictions of goddess Nimna. So do you see these connections, or am I getting a little bit complex?
I think, like, you know, we're talking about like the serpent and like trees and fruits, and the first story that, you know, pops in the mind is that, like, everybody knows is like the story of Eve. And it's so interesting because Eve's story isn't one that's empowering the way these stories are. So it's almost like you can see the change happening, like, through these stories, if that makes sense. Like,
throughout time.
Yeah, throughout time. And there's, I was watching a documentary once about Mary Magdalene, and they were talking about how you can see her imagery get smaller in religious art. So then, like, so at one point her role was definitely more important, but then as, like, we move into, like, more modern times and, you know, this patriarchy, it gets smaller and smaller, but visually in art. So I think it's really cool that you did see that, you know, piece of work of her holding the egg, because I feel like that was probably more reflective than what we get now. Like, oh, she's just a prostitute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, she was called prostitute because she's actually a bearer of the same mind, you know, which is also sexual mind, you know. And women were denying this mind for, like, I don't know how many millennia now, right? And yeah. she's there. And then during when the patriarchy really took a grip of society, suddenly it was just dangerous. And when, like, if we have time, we will also discuss, you know, Tantra, you know, and how it was repressed too, because female sexuality, which in classical Tantra is considered a way of enlightenment, you know, somebody considered it just way too dangerous and threatening to their power. And I think the reason why I went through this kind of, it may feel like a little bit, you know, detailed story back into the past about goddesses, because I was looking through this might and erotic and enlightenment kind of links in the past, realizing that, you know, there's this feminine archetype under different names that was present throughout the ancient history in all, in the two cultures I studied, right? Mm-hmm. So that, and this archetype was lost, and we really need it very badly, I think, because women are so disempowered sexually, or we just rebel and then it turns against us anyway, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we pay consequences biologically for things and, you know, and the way society views women and so on. So then I thought, you know, okay, so, and can I just elaborate a little bit on, I wanted to move to Isis, but you mentioned Eve, and it is so true, because the imagery, I didn't discuss it in the book, maybe it will be in another book, but the imagery is exactly the same. There is a serpent, except that now he's a bad guy. And in my opinion, he's considered a bad guy because it actually teaches humanity through Eve about expanded consciousness, about divine consciousness, about, you know, how we can all reach our human potential in, like, unlimited potential, not, you know, just go on your knees and pray and you're a slave and you're a sinner, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so except so the serpent, who is the great teacher in esoteric traditions, or alternatively is represented as Kundalini energy, suddenly he's the bad guy, you know, and a woman is the sinner, you know, and there's also a fruit, an apple. It's interesting, right? It's also a fruit.
Yeah.
He, this higher wisdom is offered as a gift, a fruit to Eve, and she wants to share it with Adam, but some, you know, not some kind of vicious entity, in my opinion, tells them, no, you cannot do it, you know, I want to control you.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like, my mind is, like racing right now.
Yeah, the synchronicities in what yeah, you're saying.
And, yeah, like, what you're saying, like, I've, like, believed that. For sure. I mean, and I think that there's, like, a tie. So sexual energy with women is linked to power. And I've always said that because of the womb, because we have, that is our power. And I always felt like that's why our structures, powers that be, whatever, like our current systems do shame women so much, because it's almost like you don't want us to recognize that power. Like, it's all interconnected. You know, you're talking like the spirituality, the wisdom, sexual energy, the womb, all of it. And it's almost like it's been kind of ripped from us where we can't have it, you know, like we're taught not to embrace it. And it's like we're relearning all of it as we get older, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was, I like what you said, it was taken away from us because somebody feared that power, you know, so they subjugate even. So, for example, this female sexuality. So I hope I'm not going to be too controversial here. But, for example, even when I see these beautiful singers, you know, let's say Beyoncé or, you know, whoever, right? Very sexy, very, right? And I see the way they represent sexuality is actually not very empowering. It is from the male point of view, you know, like what a guy would consider sexy. And it's kind of like, you know, crawling on your knees and doing the walk. But you understand? It is just, yeah. It's already corrupt. It is like, I it's almost like thinking, oh, I hope they will get a hard on, but not feel threatened because I'm still just a, you know, like a sexy bitch, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, instead of taking this power. And so they're using these images of Isis or, you know, Nimna or Inanna very often, but they are corrupting them because then they go on their knees and put like blood on their faces. I forgot which one was the other, I don't know, the other singer who did it. So they kind of demean it, you know, they just use these archetypes and demean it. And it's just, at the end, it is just like, you know, very actually sleazy and unsexy, in my opinion. There's nothing erotic about it. There's nothing uplifting about it. So they do use this archetype, but they try to demean it the way I believe in the other goddess that Mary Magdalene was demeaned. You know, that's why she was made prostitute instead of this empowered feminine person that was also very erotically active and using perhaps her eroticism, you know, to uplift, you know, in her relationship with Jesus, yes, him, and help him on her on his journey. Instead, she's made into a prostitute. And just for your listeners who, I don't know if they know, but of course we know now that Mary Magdalene was never prostitute. And even the Catholic Church admitted that she was not viewed as a prostitute until the 6th century. Okay, so for the first 6 centuries of Christianity, nobody thought of her as a prostitute.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a process to demean her, right? Like gradually.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I feel like, well, in general, for however long, everything's been operating for the male gaze. And anything that was deemed, any female that was deemed powerful was always, is always still going to be forced into
an archetype.
An archetype that fits whatever they want it to be.
Like when you were referring to the singers or sexuality in the media, it's like they can't be more than that too. I think that is part of it. Like they can only be this one way. Like they're not allowed, and women are more of, like, women aren't like that. Like we're a lot of different things.
Multifaceted.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. I agree. And it's so sad that, you know, that they have to do it. I presume they have to do it. You know, it wasn't like I was not criticizing Beyoncé. I think it was Katy Perry. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name properly. You know, who did the Inanna thing on a lion, and you know,
yeah,
her knees and you know, blood in her face, like, you know, just like, you know. So maybe they are forced to do it, but actually, this kind of images are very harmful to human psyche and to women's psyche, you know, because something that was intended, which I believe that female erotic power was intended as actually almost like a saving grace to humanity, you know, as something that can uplift our consciousness to even the state of expanded consciousness and enlightenment, as esoteric tantra teaches, was completely demeaned and cut off from this. And other women in history who tried, you know, to be assertive, but unassertive doesn't mean that, you know, violent, but by this I mean who claim that beauty and sexuality were demeaned historically. You know, there are women in ancient Greece who were philosophers and were very, you know, sexually, you know, empowered. You know, later in history they were considered what they called heterae, which means basically prostitutes, although they were never prostitutes. But it was like, if you're not just in the kitchen and serving patriarchy by giving the men legitimate children, you are a whore. This is the only role for a woman, through her reproductive processes and in male lineage. So, you know, if a man marries you, your children are good. If a man doesn't marry you, you're a whore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And anybody who had other aspirations, including, you know, philosophers and artists and political leaders, you know, they were immediately called heterae, right? Which means a prostitute, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite interesting. But if you don't mind, just to finish this lineage, I'll discuss briefly Isis, because I think lots of people are interested in Isis, right? There is this kind of Isis revival going on at the moment, which is this ancient Egyptian goddess, you know, and I think she's again a Mary Magdalene in disguise, because, you know, what does she do? Because Mary Magdalene is portrayed like she's just there. Jesus is resurrected and she's just there, right?
Yeah.
But, and just happened to be there when, you know, guys, cowardly, all male disciples ran away, right?
Yeah.
Because that was too scary, right? Like, to be afraid to be arrested. She stayed. So at least, you know, she was courageous, but she actually apparently has nothing to do with this, which is big BS. You know why? Because when the Bible was translated from Greek to Latin, it said, noli me tangere, supposedly Jesus said to Mary Magdalene, which means do not touch me, when she sees him, you know, on the third day, right? And it was interpreted, you know, this dirty whore, you know. Of course he didn't want to be touched by her, right? But when you look into the original Greek, right, it says memo apto, which means do not hold on to me because I have not ascended yet. That's a different language, right? Because he was afraid that maybe emotionally she was pulling him down, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, she was grieving, right? Yeah. Or maybe physically she couldn't touch him because then it would stop his whatever transmutation he was going through, right? To move to a different dimension, or you know, whatever the ascension, the process of ascension is. So what does Isis do? Well, Isis is basically empowered Mary Magdalene, because when her husband is killed, what does she do? She resurrects him, right? She resurrects him, but how does she resurrect him? It's again this erotic element. She has to find his penis, which is still erect, interestingly. And, you know, she rides him and she conceives the child, Horus. Right, so she is basically like Mary Magdalene, in my opinion, except that she's the actually the resurrection or the ascension doer, maker, right? Because without her, nothing actually happens. Now he would be just lying there, right?
It's so interesting. So I have a couple questions. So one, I think it's interesting that it's almost like we see like sex used towards like spiritual enlightenment. But then today it's like the opposite. So it's like we're extremely far removed from sex being spiritual. It's like a shameful thing that we're taught, like, and especially women. It's very controlled, which I think is interesting. And if more women knew about these goddesses and how they were these divine beings that were, you know, had, like you said, these erotic elements that were part of the spiritual practice, I think it would like make women perceive everything a lot differently. And another thing that I think is interesting too, so you were talking about Isis, and in your book you had mentioned Kali, and Kali had a story that reminds me of what you just said. And I was wondering if you could maybe talk about her a little bit.
Yes, this is actually fantastic, because I just wanted to then move on to Kali as
well. Oh, wonderful. Perfect.
Because you picked up on it, the stories are so similar, you know, except that in the other goddess, I kind of go how I arrived at it, because I go through the process, right? So because it's more of an adventure really than an academic thing. So I just, how did I arrive at this? So story of Kali is wonderful and very similar to Isis and Mary Magdalene. And by the way, Mary Magdalene is very often represented with a skull. Now, goddess Kali has lots of skulls, right? You know, she's always represented with skulls around her neck. She has a necklace made of human skulls. So similar representation, goddess Kali is also represented in red dress. And also Mary Magdalene is always represented in a red dress, right? So it's quite interesting. But the story of Kali, which is, by the way, in esoteric Hinduism, a goddess of radical transformation. So sometimes people call on goddess Kali, and I always say, be careful, because she will bring you radical transformation, which usually means you have to give up many things. And it will completely change your life in a radical way, right? Because she's a goddess of radical transformation. But how was she born? So it's a very interesting question, and very similar story to Mary Magdalene in a way at the end, because the world apparently was being ruled by demons. You know, bad people, bad entities. And goddess Durga, who is this warrior goddess riding a lion or a tiger, you know, she was gods, other gods, good gods asked goddess Durga to, you know, fight the demons. So what goddess Durga did, she basically projected herself, you know, her fury, you know, at all the evil that is going on in the world, that is destroying everything, which I think is maybe not so different from what's going on nowadays, right?
Yeah.
With the, you know, what we do to the environment and, you know, everybody. You know, so she was so furious that out of this fury, she conceived goddess Kali. So it's almost like an alter ego, right? Like the warrior alter ego. And goddess Kali, out of, you know, actually compassion for, you know, other beings, good beings that are being destroyed by demons, you know, she starts to slay all the demons. But as she's slaying them, she can't stop, no, because her fury is so great. She gets lost in her anger and her fury. And then she starts to slay also good gods, right? Because she can't stop her anger now, which is a very interesting story. And at a certain stage, she sees the handsome god Shiva. Have you seen some representations of Shiva? He is hot. He is totally hot. And, you know, he's called, I read a book recently, you know, the erotic ascetic, you know, so he's this kind of yoga meditator that is like too hot for his own good, right? So this is how Shiva is represented, right?
Too hot to handle.
Too, yes, like, wow. And he meditates too, right? Yeah. My prayers were answered. So anyway, so so she sees this. So Kali, sees God Shiva laying on the battlefield, you know, like really like Osiris, right? Completely hopeless, right? He's completely hopeless, but hey, he's still handsome and his penis is still erect, like with Osiris, right? So she looks into his beautiful eyes and she's moved by love. So she's losing her anger now, you know, when she sees him, because he, you know, she sees this love in his eyes and she starts riding him. And if she starts riding him, you know, a harmony is being brought to cosmos, and the feminine and masculine joined together bring the harmony back to the universe. And as she's doing it, she's being born again now as in another archetype as goddess Sundari, which is the tantric goddess, which is like Kali without anger. So she is the all-powerful erotic goddess that lives over, they say, under three different, you know, three different worlds. She rules over three different worlds. And she is so erotically beautiful and so powerful that when she laughs, she brings mango trees into spontaneous fruition, right? So imagine what she does to men, right? But,
about Sundari, when you said she's so powerful, we just got thunder and lightning outside of our window.
Oh, that's
and
fantastic.
The timing was perfect.
That's another synchronicity. Talking about thunder, you know, because I also got, when I was exploring Mary Magdalene, I was interested, you know, I noticed that there is this ancient Gnostic esoteric text from Egypt, Find the Perfect Mind. Do you know this? Find the Perfect Mind, it is, nobody knows who wrote it. It's maybe 350 before Christ written. And it says, I am powerful, right? I come here as a goddess. I am a whore. I am a virgin, you know? And she gives herself this kind of different qualities that normally are in contradiction. So she's powerful and she's, and but she's also sexual. She's a whore, but she's a mother, you know? So she says, I'm innocent, but I loved many men. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just like she kind of brings it together, like it's the most natural thing.
Yeah.
Found the perfect mind. So when you said there was a thunder behind, you know, when I said Sundari, so I was thinking, well, actually, there's this ancient poem, Found the Perfect Mind.
Yeah.
You know, you can even Google it, you know, and it's fantastic. Yeah. You know, I'm a virgin and I'm a whore. You know, she just says, and she says it proudly, right? And I come from power.
Wow.
Right? So like, you don't screw around with me, right? Like I am the goddess. And this is, I'm all of these things, and nobody will kind of box me here or there, right? Because
yeah.
I'm all of this, you know, and it's up to me. So I'm digressing, but actually, you know, it's really interesting about the founder and the goddess Sundari, because she's very powerful. Yet, you know, and I do mantras to her, and they are magical, like they really work.
Wow.
Your arrows, you know. So, however, now in India, hardly anybody knows about Sundari. She was suppressed like Mary Magdalene and any of his erotic goddesses that were very powerful also and brought us expansion of consciousness, you know, just kind of brothels and beauty products and massage parlors of dubious, you know, reputation are called Sundari, you know. Mm. So, like, they try to, you know, bring her down as well.
Wow.
Right? So it's across all cultures, you know, it goes across all cultures.
Wow. Yeah, that's so, yeah, because I think it's your book, but it might be a different, because I've been reading a lot of books on the goddesses, but what I'd read had mentioned Aphrodite and how her power was stripped from her as well. How some believe she was a war goddess as well, like love and war. And then as time goes on, she just starts to become this, like, just beauty, you know, nothing more. She's sexual, but it's, like, not really in a good, like, way, kind of. She's often, like, embarrassed or ashamed. There's always something, like, happened yeah. that.
Yeah, it is a sad story. Yeah, you're completely right. And, you know, in the other goddess, I talk about this Homeric hymn to goddess Aphrodite, and it's clearly been written over a long period of time because changes were made. Because at the beginning, she starts as this all-powerful goddess, very much like Inanna, actually, you know, which was also goddess of love and war, you know, and even Zeus, you know, who is later called the supreme god, right, was afraid of her because she was so powerful, right? And then suddenly, somewhere halfway through the poem, she falls in love with a human guy, you know, and she's a goddess, right? Mm-hmm. And completely loses her power. Yeah. And now everybody, so the man gains the power, the human man gains the power because, you know, like a goddess is after him, right? So, you know, his status goes up. It's a little bit like the story of patriarchy.
Yeah.
But the goddess falls down. So the moment she gets into this relationship with this human man, you know, she loses suddenly her power, and everybody, gods and humans, start to laugh at her, and she becomes a kind of a type of Marilyn Monroe, you know, like she's very beautiful, she's very sexy, she's actually very talented, but nobody respects her.
Yeah, it's so, like, I mean, and then like it ripples now today. I feel like when you were mentioning Sundari, like, and how our perception of her, I feel like that's kind of how we treat like Aphrodite in culture, like pop culture still.
Even this film, you know, by Woody Allen, which is quite old, Mighty Aphrodite, I think it was, you know, and I think it was actually about a prostitute, you know, like, and it's just like how women can seduce men and how, you know, like, it just, but it was just really very demeaning, you know, to women's sexuality. So it's just like, or I think Woody Allen also said that, you know, there's a paradox that why you cannot never meet a woman that is both intelligent and beautiful. And I think you asshole, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Like, who told you this? You know, what kind of, you know, derangement you're experiencing? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, to say something like that. And what harm you're doing to women, you know, but they think that can be either or. It's like good girl, bad girl, right? And we know strictly what's good girl, what's bad girl. But now also intelligent girl or sexy girl, you cannot be both. And who says so, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I like this poem, you know, find a perfect man. You know, I'm a virgin and I'm a whore. And yes, and, you know, I come from power.
Yeah, because I feel like there's these little subtle things that are done culturally that have, like, if you read between the lines, like, okay, well, you don't want a woman to be beautiful and smart because you want a woman to be stupid, you know, like controllable, like naive. So then it's either or. And so most women, you know, you want to be beautiful, you want to feel pretty, so it starts to add this layer, like this battle within a woman. But there's also with age as well, there's a lot of wanting women to look younger, kind of, even though all women are beautiful, like, how come those standards aren't applied to men? And you'll often see, like, these older men with very young girls, and it's fine, but if it's flipped, there's an issue. But I think that a lot of that has to do with the similar energy that the younger a girl is, the more naive she is, the more easily she's controlled. So they're really saying, like, be... again, saying, like, be stupid, you know, in a way.
Yeah, no, you're completely right.
Yeah.
Be agreeable. I completely agree, you know, and I think, like, people can choose any sexual partners they want as long as, you know, it is within right consent and right age and so on. But the truth is that there are different rules apply to women and men, and that for some reason, even men that are very intelligent fail to see the beauty, not all of the men, yeah? But often, and I think it's cultural, or maybe not cultural, it's more like cultural, but all over the globe, right? The whole planet, but they cannot see beauty of a mature woman, you know? That all often surprises me, you know? And they conceive you as beautiful only because you look younger, right? So you don't look your age, so that's good.
Yes, or you fit a certain beauty standard. And I've also seen, like, our women in general, our value, we're more valuable in our youth than we are with time, with the knowledge that we gain through experience.
which is completely ridiculous. And I just want to also tell you that in the other goddess, I said that Sundari, they say it's often represented as a teenage girl. And I said, what a nonsense, you know, because she could not have these powers, you know, because as a teenage girl, actually your sexuality is misused by other people and you have no control over your sexuality. So if you want to bring your sexuality to blossoming, you need certain experience, right? Yeah. So you are in control of your, this power, because it's a huge power, you know, it's like a nuclear power plant. You have to know how to handle it. And, you know, it took me a long time to learn how to handle this. So that's why, you know, although, you know, French culture also objectifies women in a very different way, actually, but they also objectify women. However, I like, you know, the French saying, you know, women are like wine, the older the better. So that part I like, because that if they appreciate, you know, that there is an, you know, there is certain beauty, you know, and also in terms of sexual experience and how they handle themselves, right? There is beauty there. So, but it's all very rare. Now and there, then you see something in this culture, that culture, but something positive is being said about women, you know, and older women or young women, you know, like it's always something negative. Either you're young and beautiful but stupid, or you're wise but now you're too old to be interesting, you know, all of these kind of boundaries that we have to learn to bring them together or to cross them, you know, like I do not care, you know. And there are different ways of being sexy and sexual. And that's why in The Other Goddess, I prefer to use erotic word, right? Which I actually learned when I lived in Paris, you know, which is like this erotique, you know, which is very sexy, you must admit, right? Like a man says, très erotique, or a woman, you know, whatever you like, right? It's just très erotique, very erotic. Because and sexual is just seem to be what is being portrayed in Hollywood and so on. You know, when people have sex in Hollywood, it's just like they met and it's a big bang. And of course it can be great, but somehow, you know, this is the only way that it is portrayed. You know?
Yeah.
There's none of this, what I write in the first part of the book, you know, about erotic connection, right? About erotic rapture, about recognition of each other's souls through sexual intimacy, right? Like, how come nobody's exploring this? And then I get, you know, emails from people, oh, I had this amazing experience, and just people start to open up, because people do have these experiences, but, you know, they are not in the public eye. And not, it's not because they are private experiences, because Hollywood has no problems with showing very intimate experiences, except as if they are on the lowest level of sexuality, right? Like, you know, just the... you know, very kind of animalistic sex, which, you know, can be very enjoyable, but this is not what it is all about. You know, this is just one part, right? Just this is one choice that you can make.
Yeah, and there's like when you were saying, like, the spiritual aspect, like the energy of creation, you know, like that's a part of that too, which is like, you know, something that's an important, like, you know, the sacral chakra and how that's also where your creative energy and stuff is as well. So it's all kind of like intertwined in a way and should be like kind of appreciated, I think.
So this is, that's why I studied, you know, esoteric tantra, which is a kind of esoteric form of Hinduism, because there actually the feminine sexuality is being recognized by the Brahmins, which is the highest priest. Right, is being recognized as the actually giver of enlightenment, because it is so powerful. So actually a woman is the carrier of this amazing power, which is like, I believe it's a Kundalini energy with an erotic aspect, because actually Kundalini energy is very erotic, as you know from my experience, right? I experienced it differently several times, but this one was also very erotic. And, you know, and a man, even a great guru, needs a woman so she can pass this experience to him. So her experience is filling up on him. Then he gets it as well, right? So it's the movement of woman's kundalini, when it is powerful, that, you know, spills on her erotic partner. And right. Then, you know, as Kula Ritual says, you know, the tantric masterpiece from the 10th century, says, then they walk like gods and goddesses on earth. So why do they walk like gods and goddesses on earth? it is because that consciousness expanded, right?
Mm.
So we are like in divine consciousness through an erotic act, but a man cannot do it without a woman.
Wow.
That's the power. But what happened even in this tradition, unfortunately, you know, because of its power, as we three of us agree on this, it is when men gurus started to use women as objects for that. So they get a high, you know, like a spiritual high, right? So women again lost control over this. And then I was speaking to this French scholar, Daniel Audier, and who wrote a really also a good book, Tantric Quest. And now in my next book, I'm going to actually explore this lineage of yoginis and lineage of priestesses from, you know, northern India that preceded actually Hinduism, that were carriers or bearers of this tradition. And even in the other goddess I mentioned, Arda Triambaka, who was supposed to be a daughter, one of the original sages or gods who descended upon this planet. You know, that's an interesting story. And said, you know, all of these gods coming from somewhere else, right? And, you know, and she thought that her gift to humanity was, you know, teaching women how to, you know, bring enlightenment through as an erotic act.
Mm.
So she's like the first priestess, Arda Triambaka, and it was her idea. And, you know, she's like a daughter of the original sage, or, you know, the original god. So so she's a little bit like Eve as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a gift, right? She's not being punished for this. And she started this lineage, Kola lineage, that, you know, was teaching priestesses to do this. But then it was intercepted by the Brahmins, and, you know, it was corrupted. And it's even now used by gurus, you know, but the gurus have control, not women, right? So women really have to explore this possibility, you know, of eros or enlightenment for erotic means, because this is our gift, you know.
Yeah.
And also in this ritual, which is called the Kula ritual, when, you know, this was actually happening, very often the participants were asked to drink wine mixed with menstrual blood, because the power of menstrual blood was recognized as this life-giving, you know, liquid, really, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is very certain power there in that. But it was also like almost like sublime acceptance of the feminine as well, right? Yeah, like this is like I completely, and at the end I give this prayer, and the other goddess, you know, man puts a hand on a woman's body and says, I honor you as goddess Shakti.
Mm.
Wow, that's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And everything about you, right? Your fluids, you know, your body, the gift of consciousness that you're giving to me. You know,
wow.
While you're young.
Yeah, like recognizing like the sacredness in a woman versus the need to like control her or
right.
as
right.
you serve me, like kind of thing. Like you did this for me. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I can't believe it's already 54 minutes. Oh my goodness. I have this one question.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a Joseph Campbell book and I just started it, and there was this one thing that said that kind of like bugged me, and I was saving to ask you about it.
Mm-hmm.
He said there are no models in our mythology for an individual woman's quest. And it bothered me because he was like, the book was implying like there's no goddess that represents the modern woman and what she experiences, because he said that women were originally just kind of, you know, the hunter-gatherer society, that we were kind of like a certain way. And then with the invention of appliances, that we were able to get out of the house and like have a new experience differently than our ancestors.
I completely don't believe this, and I think
it's really like
Gimbutas, I think the scholar, I think, I don't know if she was Lithuanian or, but, you know, famous scholar now, that Maria Gimbutas, she actually completely proves this kind of theory is wrong. So, yeah. And you know, I'm a little bit surprised at Joseph Campbell, because I normally really like him, and he wrote this book, Goddesses. I'm not sure if this is the book you talk about or something.
I have this book. It's a collection of his works, and it's called The Mysteries of the Feminine Divine. Yeah, and that was in the beginning, and it like was nagging at me because I don't believe that at all.
And you are correct. So I'm a little bit surprised. I don't remember this from this book. I'm a little bit surprised, but you know, he's done actually lots of good work, and here he was just wrong. Not everybody's always right. So he's totally wrong. And obviously, for some reason, he has never heard about Inanna. You know, like, what about Artemis? You know, what about Artemis? What about Athena? Like, even basic Greek goddesses, they are all independent. Like, Athena never even bothered to marry anyone. Artemis, she, like, shot a guy if she saw him. You know what I mean? And that's true, because this is part of the story, right?
Yeah.
Of the mythology. So I'm not sure why he said it. Maybe he was, I don't know the context of this, because obviously he meant that this was not developed in modern times. You know, like there's a Skywalker, right? Like, because he's talking about also like about Star Wars, you know, Skywalker as this kind of hero's journey, classical journey, and so on. And I think that perhaps what he meant, although I'm just guessing, right? Because I don't remember this, what the context was there, that it was not explored in our times. And in this, he's right, because it's up to us that we have to explore it. You have to revive these goddesses, at least as archetypes. And there are ways of doing it through mantras, through meditation, through contemplation on the images of a chosen goddess, you know, because then this is called Visio Divina. So you envision something that you want to embody, right? And then, you know, and then we have to, like, modernize the quest, because the goddesses are there. You know, there is Inanna, and there is Isis, and there is Aphrodite before, you know, they corrupted her. There is Sundari, there is Kali, nobody dares, you know, to upset Kali, right? There is Durga, you know, and Campbell was very familiar with Hinduism, right? So there is Saraswati as well, which is goddess of wisdom. There is Athena. So there are lots of independent goddesses who totally rock. But we somehow have to embody them. So if you don't mind, I'll just digress at the end before we finish, because I know the show is 1 hour. So sometimes, because I also teach course in women in leadership, and it kind of annoys me, because women often say, if a man did it, it would be fine. And it's true. But I say, why would you do with a man what a man would do? You know, you have so much more. You know, so men made so many mistakes, like we are ruining the planet, for example. So why do we have to imitate that behavior? Yes. So I think the goddess, you know, or the Mary Magdalene with her hand extended with a gift to humanity, it is explore your divine consciousness as the feminine, in the feminine guise, because, well, the world needs nothing more at the moment than that. This is the most important thing. We are not here to, you know, become women that are like men, empowered like men. We have to empower ourselves and the world in a completely different way, right? Why imitate men, you know?
Yeah, I love that, for sure, because why would we want to do that? Why would we want to keep the same
cycles going?
Yeah,
it's just being a man, a woman, but acting like a man. That's, for me, actually, the ultimate betrayal of the feminine.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that you're saying that too, because like even when you think of like femininity, oftentimes women or there's like this like idea that you have to make yourself more aggressive or like like, you know, wear a power suit or like kind of like you were mentioned imitating like these energies we associate with men. And then like then we poo poo all of these like very feminine things as being like weak, like, you know, like pink and girly, but it's not. You know, it's beautiful. It is a part of like our power, and like we should embrace these feminine qualities and like stand in that, versus like you were, had said, trying to be like how the male energy.
It's like I'm trying to imitate.
Yeah.
So be assertive the way Goddess Durga is assertive, or, you know, or Athena or Artemis, you know, like, or even Sundari, which is, you know, glorious in her sexuality, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, so you can be assertive, but find what it means to be assertive and be feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, rather than being assertive like a guy, you know, walking with your, you know, legs spread and, you know, like you have balls or something, right? Yeah. So this is not how we walk. Why we should behave like that, right?
Yeah.
Just like Yeah. So I've challenged, you know, young women to this, you know. And I work in academia, and I think, you know, why do academic has to be this particular way, you know, like look particular way and to be respected and so on. I said, like, be whoever you want to be as an academic or as an astronaut, or if you're in sports, you know, or whatever, or if you choose a more traditional role, it's up to you, but it is your choice and you embody it, you know, as you.
Yeah.
Love that.
I do too. Wow, this was so inspiring.
Yes.
I feel like this is going to really help a lot of people. Thank you for doing this.
Pleasure talking to you, ladies.